I'm going to, from this point all the way up to Easter, I'm going to take us through a journey of the lectionary. We don't frequently do the lectionary here. We kind of look at what stories are going on and what we need to talk about and find the appropriate Bible story to go along. But I thought this might be interesting. We're going to do the gospel lectionary reading all the way up to Easter. So that's what we're looking at today. And I say that because, in part, the gospel reading for today is really long. And I've actually chopped it up a little bit to kind of make it a little... They basically want you to read an entire chapter. So we won't have a second reading today. But I do want to share with you the lectionary reading for today. And it is a story that you'll be familiar with. It comes from the Gospel of John, chapter 9. And I'm going to read verses 1 through 13. And then they want you to read all the way through 38. I've cut out about 10 verses right there in the middle. And we're going to do 1 through 13 and then 28 through 38. And I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version from the updated edition of that. So hear now these words. As he walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or this man's parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." And when he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud into the man's eyes, saying to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam. I can't say that word all of a sudden. Siloam, which meant sent. Then he went and washed and came back able to see. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar asked the question, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" And some were saying, it is he. And others were saying, "No, but it's someone who looks like him." And he kept saying, I am he. But they kept asking, "How were your eyes opened?" And he answered, "The man called Jesus made mud, spread it in my eyes, and said, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' Then I went and I washed and received my sight." And they said, "Well, where is he?" And he said, "I do not know." They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Then they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciples, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses. But as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." And the man answered, "Here is an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from. Yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships him and obeys his will. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't do this thing." They answered him, "You were born entirely in sins, and are you trying to teach us?" And they drove him out. Jesus heard that they had driven him out. And when he found him, he said, "Do you believe that I am the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir, to tell me so that I may believe in him?" And Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and the one speaking to you is he." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. And we had blessing that meaning to the reading of these words. Joel.
One day a beggar on a long highway, lying helpless staring upon the sand, and an old demon dreamed out on the byway. the heathen held it proudly in his hand. And the woman smiled a gentle smile in the wind, and whispered something softly in his ear. Perhaps a little present of the growing, perhaps a word of comfort through the fear. And you can trust the moon to move the mighty ocean, and you can trust the sunshine upon the land. Take the little that you know and do the best you can, and see the rest in the quiet way. The tractor makes its way along the fence line. Leave the drop precisely in the road. In the rain is kind, the window will take the crops off. Before too long, the crops will start to show. And the farmer sees the fields around the bright day. He whispers something low beneath his breath. Perhaps a little prayer and a help for a wait. Perhaps a word of thanks for all the rest. And you can trust the moon to move the mighty ocean. And you can trust the sun to shine upon the land. Take the little that you know and you do the best you can. The rest, there's a storm-tossed ship tonight on the waters. There's a soul who sails alone out on the blue. There's a dreamer with his eyes on the heavens. They're all looking for ways to make it through. And you can trust the mighty ocean. You can trust the sunshine on the land. You can live that you know, and you do the best you can. And you see the rest in the quiet in the land. And you can trust the moon to the mighty ocean. You can trust the sun to shine upon the land. You take the little that you know, and you do the best you can. You see the rest in the quiet in the land. You see the rest in the quiet in the land.
Thank you again, Joel.
Very much. We appreciate that.
My message this morning is entitled, Who is Really Blind? So there are stories in the Bible that seem simple, at least on the surface. A miracle happens, someone's healed, the crowd's amazed, end of story. But every now and then, the gospel writers will slip us a story that is doing something much more interesting than just that. This is one of those stories. Because if you read John 9 pretty closely, you'll start to notice something that I would call a little bit strange. The only person who begins the story blind is the only one at the end who is seeing clearly. And then the people who begin the story absolutely certain that they can see. Well, I would say that they're the ones that, well, end up sort of stumbling around in the dark, at least metaphorically. Now, on the surface, this story looks like it is about a miracle, right? I mean, it's almost hard to not see it as a miracle story. A man, born blind, receives his sight. And that alone would have been an astonishing thing in the ancient world. I mean, it's still sort of an astonishing thing even in our modern world with modern technology. But keep in mind, for people living at that time, blindness was often assumed to have some moral or spiritual cause behind it. Someone must have done something wrong. Someone must be to blame for this. And that is why the disciples start the story with the question that in a lot of ways still echoes in our world today. Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? In other words, whose fault is it? Whose fault is this? We humans, we've actually always sort of loved that question. Who is to blame? Who deserves what they got? Who brought this on themselves? Well, Jesus shuts down that line of thinking almost immediately. He refuses to play that blame game entirely. He says that this man's condition is not a punishment, it's not a moral lesson, it's not some kind of cosmic payback. Instead, Jesus does something far more disruptive. He heals the man. And here's where the story, I believe, gets interesting. Because the healing itself, well, it turns out not to even be the center of the whole story. The miracle happens almost quietly in this story. Jesus makes some mud, tells the man to wash, and suddenly the man can see. Now that should be the end of this story. But it's not. It's not. The real drama in this story begins after the miracle happens. You see, the neighbors, they don't even know what to do with this. They argue about whether this is even the same man that couldn't see. And not surprisingly, the religious leaders, they launch an investigation. They interrogate the man. They interrogate his parents. They interrogate the man again. And what started out as a miracle turns into something that looks a lot more like some kind of courtroom drama. And the man, who had spent his life begging by the roadside, he suddenly becomes the most important witness in the room. Think about that for a moment. This person, everybody had spent years ignoring, the one people walked by every day, the one that society had basically quietly pushed to the side, that person now stands in the center of this story. And the experts are forced to finally listen to him. That is not an accident. That's not an accident. The author of John is doing something very intentional there. Because by the time the story is over, the man who was once blind becomes the clearest voice of truth in the entire chapter. And the people who claim at the beginning to know everything about what God cannot recognize, everything about God, they end up not being able to recognize what's happening right in front of them. That's sort of the irony of this story. The Pharisees, whose very name sounds like Pharisees, are the ones who cannot see at all. They cannot see the miracle. They cannot see the transformation. They cannot see the possibility that God might be doing something that's outside of their knowledge and their expectations. Why? That's the big question. Why? Well, I'd say it's because they are so certain that they already know how God works. Certainty can sort of do that to us, you know. When we are absolutely sure that we already understand everything, well, we stop paying attention to what is actually happening. And that's the real blindness in this story. That's the blindness. Not the blindness of the man who sat beside the road, But the blindness of the people who are so convinced they can see clearly that they cannot recognize transformation when it happens. That's the real blindness. One of the things I love about the telling of this story is that the author of John keeps pushing the irony further and further. Because the man who was healed does something remarkable. He starts asking the questions. At first, he barely understands what had happened. All he can say is, the man called Jesus made mud and told me to go wash. But the more that the leaders start questioning him, the more that his confidence builds. And he eventually starts pushing back at them. He asks them a question that I think has a little bit of humor in it. He says, oh, do you want to be his disciples too? That's absolutely full. That's just beautiful. He was beautifully full of gall to do that. I mean, you can almost hear when he asks the Pharisees that question, you can almost hear the ring of silence. Don't y'all want to be disciples of this too? The beggar has become the teacher here. The outsider has become the theologian. The one who had nothing to offer the religious establishment is now the one that is speaking truth to power. And the leaders respond in the way that institutions often do when they're confronted with uncomfortable truth. They throw them out. The unfortunate truth is that that kind of thing happens a lot throughout religious history. When people at the edges begin to see something clearly, the people in the center sometimes decide the easiest solution is to simply remove those outsiders from the conversation at all. But the story is not finished. Because after the man is thrown out by the Pharisees, Jesus goes and finds him again. And Jesus says something that feels almost backwards. He says, I came into the world so that those who do not see may see, and those that think they see may go blind. Now, in a lot of ways, that line sounds a little harsh because of who's speaking it to. It sounds harsh until we understand what it actually means. Because you see, Jesus, he's not punishing people with blindness. What he's doing is describing what happens when certainty hardens our hearts. The people most open to transformation, well, they're often the people who know that they do not have everything figured out yet. And conversely, the people who are most resistant to transformation are often the people who are convinced that they already know everything they need to know. Which brings us to the uncomfortable question that this story asks of every generation that reads it. What are we refusing to see? What are we refusing to see? Because this story is not just about a blind man in the first century. It's also about us. It's about the ways that communities can become so comfortable with their assumptions that they miss the possibility of new life that's unfolding right in front of them. It's about the ways that institutions sometimes protect their certainty instead of celebrating transformation. It's about the way that people who were once pushed to the margin often end up seeing something that the rest of us have missed. Now, before we go any further, I want us to try something together. I want to ask you, again, to turn to someone near you. It can be someone you know well, or if you are brave enough, someone that you've never spoken to during this time. And for a moment, I want you to just share this question or thought with each other. Tell about a time when you realized that you had been wrong about something important. And What helped you finally see it differently? And that last part's really the important part. What helped you see it differently? And it doesn't need to be something that will, you know, solve the problems of the universe. It can be a very small little thing. Because all that really matters is, what was it that helped you see it differently to realize that you needed to change your understanding? So take about 2 minutes, a minute each, and then I'll get your attention back to think about and then to share with each other when you changed your mind and what was it that helped you do so. Go ahead and take them all with each other. Here's the thing about what we just talked about, or what you were talking about amongst yourself. Moments like that can actually end up feeling uncomfortable. Realizing that we have been wrong, sometimes it can feel embarrassing, it can feel destabilizing, it can even, depending on how big the thing is, it can even feel a little threatening. But it is frequently also how growth happens. The people in John's story who are willing to ask questions are the ones who move towards understanding. The ones who refuse to question anything, they're the ones who ultimately end up stuck right where they've always been. See, the man born blind begins the story with a physical limitation. But he ends the story with a spiritual openness. The religious leaders, on the other hand, begin the story with confidence. They end it locked inside of their own certainty, unable to move forward at all. And if there is actually any sort of miracle in this story, I think that reversal is the real miracle. But the miracle is not just that a man receives sight. The miracle is that someone that society had dismissed becomes the clearest witness to the truth. Again and again, in the stories about Jesus, that's how love seems to work. The people we assume have the least to offer turn out to be the ones who frequently help us see the most clearly. The voices that we were taught to ignore become the voices that challenge our assumptions. The people who were pushed outside of the system become the ones revealing where the system has gone wrong. And that pattern hasn't stopped today. Throughout history, movements towards justice, almost always have begun with people that the dominant culture had been refusing to listen to. People who were told that their voices did not matter. People who were expected to stay quiet. People who were expected to remain invisible. And yet, their voices kept speaking. Because sometimes the clearest vision comes from the edges. See, I think the real question this story leaves us with is not whether we believe that a miracle happened that many years ago, a long time ago. I think that the real question is much closer to home. When transformation happens to us, when people once excluded begin to thrive, when new possibilities for justice and healing begin to emerge, will we recognize it? Or will we cling so tightly to our certainty that we cannot see what is folding out right in front of us? Because the Gospel of John leaves us with a quiet but powerful truth. The greatest obstacle to seeing clearly is not blindness. It is the assumption that we already see everything there is to see. The greatest obstacle to seeing clearly is not blindness. It is the assumption that we already see everything that there is to see. And you know, maybe that is an invitation that the story has. Maybe it's just that simple, this story's invitation. To remain curious. To remain humble. To remain open to the possibility that love is always doing something new. Even when it appears in places that we didn't expect, even when it arrives through voices that we once ignored, even when it asks us to admit that our vision might need some adjusting. Because sometimes the most faithful thing we can say, sometimes is simply, I don't know, rather than I already know. Sometimes the most faithful thing we can say is, I am ready to see. I am ready to see. Amen. So, can we ask you for another song? For sure.
Sounds like we could use more light in the world.
Absolutely.
Sun is increasing these days. So here's an appropriate one from the Beatles. Here comes the sun, here comes the storm, and I say, it's alright. Too long, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Been nothing, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. It's all right.
Thanks again, Bill.
Thank you very much.
Let's take a moment and still ourselves, silence the world around us a bit, accept this as a prayer or as a moment of reflection. Let's bow our heads together. We come to this moment aware that sight is not as simple as opening our eyes. We have seen things clearly before, only to recognize later that what we thought was clarity was really comfort. We've held tightly to ideas that made us feel certain, only to discover that certainty can sometimes be its own kind of blindness. So today, may we be moved towards a deeper kind of seeing. Not the kind that scans the surface, labels people quickly, and decides who belongs and who does not. But the kind of seeing that notices dignity where the world has refused to look. The kind of seeing that recognizes wisdom in voices we were taught to ignore. The kind of seeing that notices love showing up in unexpected places and unexpected people in unexpected ways. May we be reminded that transformation often begins on the margins. May we be reminded that truth sometimes arrives through the voices of those who have been pushed aside. May we be reminded that the ones we were taught to overlook may be the ones helping the world see most clearly. And when our own vision grows cloudy with fear, with habit, with the comfort of old assumptions, may we be gently unsettled. May we be curious enough to ask new questions. May we be humble enough to admit when we have been wrong. May we be brave enough to see things differently. Because the world is still full of people who have been told they do not matter. It's still full of people whose gifts have been dismissed. Still full of people whose stories may have been ignored. May we be the kind of people who notice them. May we be the kind of people who listen. May we be the kind of people who recognize love when it appears among us. And when that love asks us to see the world more clearly, may we have the courage to open our eyes. Amen. See this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may you share that love and happiness with all of those you meet. Joe, can we ask you for one last song?
Sure. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see the blue for me. I think about myself what a wonderful world.
Christy Snap.
The brightness of the day, the dark sacred night, the passer, my wonderful world. Pretty in the sky are also on faces, but they fool the high. I see friends shaking hands, say, how do you do? Yes, yeah, I love you. And if they cry, I watch them grow to learn much more. I'm one of the world.